So let me butt in for just one second. And some of you are probably wondering, this is the audience participation part of the program. I'm sure that a lot of you are going, is this really real? How many of you have actually Googled yourself? Some? Have you Googled yourself putting in your home address? It's amazing what you can find. And I'll give you a good example. I Googled myself, and I put in my home address. And mind you, the government has a whole program to shield driver's license number. I mean, there's a tag that comes up in the motor vehicle records of the car that's registered to me. And so, you know, there are all of these things out there that are meant to protect people from finding me. It took me about 30 minutes, and I had my driver's license number. And you think about what you can do with your home address, your driver's license. Won't be that hard to get your Social Security number. And once you have that, I don't know why you would, but, you know, Bill Wallander can become me. It's not that hard. And so, I mean, this is something that you ought to be worried about your clients. You ought to be worried about yourself. You ought to really take this stuff seriously.
Well, and I'd like to also say that just the directions we could have gone on this panel, and I really commend my co-panelists on this, we could have gone kind of a dry approach of the practicalities of 107A and how to, and we'll get into that a little bit if we get there. But we're going in a different direction, I think, and it really is going to make this much more interesting and impactful because I'll be honest, I didn't give a lot of thought to people like who are worried about domestic violence and that sort of thing. When you're in the thick of the thing and you're representing debtors' counsel, you're just trying to get things done. And an extra step is difficult, and it's something you want to avoid. I'll also speak a little bit on behalf of the Attorney General's office, even though I don't work there anymore. I'm going to say we every time I refer to the AG. It's just a habit. But we're very often aligned with the U.S. trustee, almost always. We go hand in hand with the U.S. trustee on issues, but on these privacy issues, we can be very 180 degrees off because some of the materials you'll look at is you'll see the U.S. trustee is going in there and is very motivated to preserve the integrity of the bankruptcy process, which is public information. When I was at the AG's office, I didn't really care that much about that. When I appeared in these cases, these retail cases, I appeared usually on behalf of the Consumer Protection Division, and I cared about things that affected consumers, like having their information sold over their objection. So it's an interesting dynamic that the U.S. trustee and the AG's office actually are not copacetic on a lot of these issues.
And I think that, you know, as we've progressed in bankruptcy, I think it's obvious that cases have become a lot more complex, and the number of creditors have really exploded, not only in the major retail cases like Charming Charlie or JCPenney or Neiman Marcus, you know, but also things have expanded in the crypto world where there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of creditors that are individuals. And some of the cases, sadly, involve survivors of sex abuse, both in corporate settings. Also, you have the diocese, the Boy Scouts. So it's something that people really need to be conscious of as attorneys as to who your individual creditors are, be they employees, former employees, contractors, you know, just individuals who, as Jason will get into later, sign up for a loyalty card. It's out there, and people have to be very, very conscious when you are putting together your matrix, your schedules, all of your pleadings as to who is going to be impacted individually and what steps can be taken prospectively to try and protect them.
Yeah, as Susan and I started talking about the problem, we realized, and this slide has just some, it's a non-exhaustive list of some of the areas where in your typical Chapter 11 case, you run into this, where if you follow the typical path, if you do what we've always been doing, you're going to be publishing people's names and home addresses on the docket. So creditor matrix schedules and SOFAs, affidavits of service, petitions for individuals, There's also some ones missing here, like fee applications. There aren't any number of documents. So as you put them together, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, you know, add this lens to your practice, right? What are we actually putting in this document that's going up online? Because as we said, you know, most people don't really understand the Chapter 11 practice, and you're working with other people's data. And that's an issue that we started recognizing. And very quickly, it hit the world stage. And so there are jurisdictions around the world that are issuing privacy laws that, so now, not only from a practical perspective, we want to protect people's safety, we want to make sure, you know, we're not invading their privacy, but now as attorneys for these companies, you know, when you're a debtor's counsel, you have to make sure that you're not accidentally forcing your client into violating these laws, which carry some really intense penalties.
Yeah, I mean, there are U.S. laws, which I think Jason will touch on, but I think the law that gets the most press is the GDPR, which is the European laws, both in the EU and now the UK. And the ramifications for violating those are crippling to a company. In the UK, if a company is found liable of breaching the privacy law, it's 20 million euros or 4% of worldwide revenue, whichever is greater. And in the UK, it's 17 million pounds or 4% of worldwide revenue, whichever is greater. And some major companies have been fined. Amazon was fined 746 million euros.